What do you do when you discover there's a bull market on Wall Street for prisons? What do you do when you find out that the parent company of your local bank branch is investing in private prisons, betting on a growth of inmates in a time of declining crime rates, and they are supporting new laws designed to bring in fresh inmates and more profit every year, starting with migrant workers? Once you've connected those dots, you might not want business as usual. You might want to stand up and shout about it. When thousands of people stand up with you, it's a movement.
On January 6th, the Occupy movement in Santa Rosa, California, joined up with immigrant rights organizations and called a halt to business as usual at Wells Fargo Bank. It was a day when the spirit of Mario Savio, a campus occupier in 1964, who spoke up and became the fiery orator of the free speech movement, once again called for people to throw themselves over the levers of the machine and bring it to a halt. Activists closed two branch offices that day, with seven among them arrested. It was not so much a demonstration as a community. Mario Savio wasn't accompanied by a marching brass band, nor did the free speech movement draw people from all walks of life and across four generations. Chicano farm worker organizer Cesar Chavez said that a march is a prayer in motion, and in keeping with the view of spiritual intention, this march was led by a group of Aztec dancers called Goyoshalki.
It was a day to tell the world to look and listen and find out what business as usual means when your bank holds stock in private detention centers. How does a private prison company grow its business when crime rates are declining? Advertise on TV, persuading people to commit more crimes so they can come and enjoy your accommodations? No, what you do is contribute to racist state senators who pass laws designating new crimes that target a scapegoated group of outsiders, undocumented immigrants.
Being undocumented wasn't a crime in Georgia, Arizona, or Alabama until those states were lobbied by private imprisonment firms such as GEO Group and Corrections Corporation of America. Now anyone who looks undocumented can be picked up and detained in private prisons that, by the way, get funded by the same laws. Round up your scapegoats, fill up the prisons, and watch their Wall Street stocks prices go up. Stock owned and managed, by the way, by Wells Fargo, to the tune of $100 million. Corrections and incarceration are user-friendly euphemisms for throwing people into jail, and even better one, detention. Oh, we're just keeping you late after school, taking a little of your time.
The new community stamps GEO Group and CCA with the real nature of their business. They are imprisonment companies, and their brand of imprisonment has a record of abuse. According to government documents obtained by the Frontline News Program and the American Civil Liberties Union, immigrants held in U.S. immigration detention facilities filed more than 170 allegations of sexual abuse over the last 4 years, mostly against guards and other staff at the centers.
We're seeing a new community move forward, one in which everybody is somebody. One that tears away the veils of deception and abuse, putting in their place a localized culture where everyone works together for common intentions. In this special edition montage of Shift Shapers, we hear Evelina Molina and Mauricio Velasquez interview Karim Sanchez and Bianca Jordan with the background music of the Occupy Santa Rosa band. We also talk to Rick Tice and Kim Calloway at the march. Mario Savio and George Carlin were there in spirit, possibly summoned by the Aztec dancers. In the studio, Daniel Kirvine interviews two people who were arrested that day, Jesse, who only gave his first name, and Tony Del Monte. Seven people were arrested, some involved with Occupy Santa Rosa, some involved with the other affinity groups in solidarity that day. These were the first arrests of Occupy Santa Rosa activists. Jesse calls it getting their feet wet. We call it throwing your body on the machine.
Hi, can I get your name?
Karim Sanchez.
Okay, Karim, why are you here today?
I'm here with Mecha, the SRJC. We're here to show some support, some solidarity, and to protest against Wells Fargo's investments into these immoral, straight evil institutions that exploit our people.
So I noticed you're wearing an orange jumpsuit that is worn in prison. Why is that?
That's correct. That's to symbolize how I would kind of fit the profile, you know, of someone they would like to see in those prisons.
So from a college student to a prisoner in a detention system.
That's right. There's definitely a pipeline in the whole prison industrial complex. You know, somebody's making a profit from us being in these privatized prisons.
So can you tell me, Mecha is the Movimiento Estudiantil Chicano de Aztlán. What impact has been a part of Mecha done to you in your consciousness and in your critical thinking?
Well, to be honest, and just for a quick correction, the SRJC chapter actually changed the Chicano part to Chicanista to not be exclusive of the mujeres in the movimiento, porque, you know, we have a lot of mujeres también.
That's nice.
Thanks. But well, how Mecha has helped me actually is to kind of find an identity, because I grew up in this country undocumented, and for a long time, you know, I technically wasn't American, and if I went to Mexico, they'd be like, oh, eso no sabe hablar, right? And they wouldn't call me Mexican. So what Mecha really did is for me is to adopt Chicanismo as not only a way of life and a way of thinking, but as an identification.
Can you tell me, in Arizona, they're abolishing the Mexican studies from the school system. Is the National Mecha addressing that in any way? And what is your feeling about the abolition of Mexican-American studies in the school system?
To be honest, I don't know how Mecha nationally is addressing it. I know that it's one of the hot topics for Mecha Nacional. But I feel that it's kind of cutting us at the roots. You know, there's a saying that says, a person that doesn't know their history is like a tree with no roots. And, you know, it will go whichever way the wind blows. So I think that getting rid of programs like that, we're going to be blown whichever way the wind blows. Yeah, so we'll go.
So do you think it's a direct action on the empowerment of the Mexican-American youth?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. They don't want to see us prosper, I guess.
So what do you think could be done to counteract that? If they've already succeeded in passing the legislation, what do you think could happen, like maybe after school? Studies.
Well, I think it's really taking this type of education to the old verbal traditions that we used to have, you know. Mecha, the SRJC, puts on a yearly conference in which we invite high school students from around the area to an all-day conference where we teach them about Chicano empowerment, we teach them about knowing their roots and knowing their rights and about pursuing a higher education. And I think it's really going to have to move to each individual student going and talking to their little primos and their cousins or, you know, other family members and just really keeping an oral tradition alive.
One more time, can you tell us your name?
Karim Sanchez.
Great. How old are you?
21.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Ok, bueno, estamos transmitiendo una vez más para acá de BF, Mauricio, corresponsal Mauricio Velázquez. And what is your name?
Bianca.
Bianca. What makes you be part of this movement?
Well, as someone who's part of the working class and who's affected by all the decisions of my legislation, you know, my job situation, my housing situation has been affected directly. And with Wells Fargo right now, you know, they are able to control more of the government than the average U.S. citizen. And so I am the average U.S. citizen, so therefore I have less control of my government than a big corporation.
So basically you were one of the many that were affected out of this situation. And what can you tell people that is listening to us right now out there?
Well, what's occurring now in this country is a great gap between people who are making a lot of money and people who aren't making very much money. And, you know, back when Reagan was in office and before that when Kennedy was in office and even before that, you know, the top 1% of this country were paying close to 90% in taxes and they were still wealthy. So, you know, to say that, you know, oh, we shouldn't get rid of the Bush tax cuts, we shouldn't punish the wealthy, it's not a punishment. It's something that will be for the good of the entire country. And so if you're not part of the 1%, which none of us are, it's in your best interest to get behind this movement because you're supporting policies and legislation and a change in the entire system that will better everyone's lives as a whole.
That is the worst of Bianca.
What are you doing here today?
I'm protesting corporate prisons.
Have you had any encounters with the police here yet?
I just had one.
Yeah, what happened?
Me and my friend were using the megaphone, and they tried to take it away from us. And we were technically detained. And that was interesting. And then they came back to us and said, oh, whoops, our bad. It's in your permit. You can use it.
So I've never heard of a march where you can't use a bullhorn.
It's noise pollution. I'm polluting the air. I'm sorry.
But everything's okay.
Yeah, aside from that, I haven't heard anything else.
Hello.
One heart.
Do you think that the bank is closed to all the public?
Oh, no, it's closed. The doors are locked. We have shut down Wells Fargo. I know that they went into the bank. There were other people who were going to join them inside the bank, and suddenly the doors were closed, and those people were caught in there. So my assumption is they're being arrested, but nobody will tell me, and I'm a lawyer. I'm trying to find out what's happening to my client.
We actually have an official sort of high corporate tax rate somewhere in the 30s. A lot of companies don't pay that. The effective tax rate is 14% due to all the loopholes. These guys have a negative tax rate because they take in so many tax breaks, they are now no longer even paying 0% corporate taxes. So not only are they part of the whole system that has crashed our economy, they are now part of the system that is steadily bankrupting our government. So if you're not sure about the sources regarding the prisons or all that, be sure that they are steadily destroying the government that way. LA Times.
Big clothes.
We want houses, not jails.
Occupy.
Down by the river. Bobby Bond, gonna fall by the same way that switch it through like gravity.
My name's Daniel Kerbine, host of Shift Shapers Pole Reversal Radio, and I have with me in the studio Jesse, who is active with Occupy Santa Rosa. We will be talking about the action that took place on Friday, January 6th, in which there was civil disobedience, and it focused on Wells Fargo and their investments and their practices. And I am joined here in the studio by Jesse, who is active with Occupy Santa Rosa. Thank you for joining us here.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
And I was here in the studio during that time. You could say that I was anchoring. The things were being called in to me, and I was saying, here's what's happening out there. One of the things that I heard very often when the Occupy Santa Rosa first started, it was an encampment. There were tents out there. I found something exciting about it. It was something exciting, brand new. It got cold, so it had to kind of turn into something else. So I'm not going to put words in your mouth about that. But one thing that I do want to ask you about is, did you ever get any feedback when that was going on? And did you ever get any feedback from people saying, well, this is not a diverse, very diverse community. Where are all the Latinos and where are all of the other aspects, the other ethnic groups in the county?
It's a good question. In many ways, I talk extensively with Carl Patrick, who's a real core organizer. I hesitate to use the term core, but he's really very much critical to a lot of things that go on. And I've asked Carl about this, and why aren't these people coming to us? No, it's not what's wrong with these people. What are we doing wrong that is keeping these people from wanting to come and be with us over here? It's a shared thing. And Carl has made enormous inroads, or has established, because of the issues,
yeah,
we've really had a very neat locking of arms, because we have very much a common foe in Wells Fargo. And mm-hmm. it is issue-based, but in many ways it provides that necessary segue between the two groups that ordinarily was a bit more difficult to foment than we'd all hoped.
So what is it that about this focus on Wells Fargo? Because I was thinking, well, Bank of America, there's Chase, bought out a bunch of banks. And what is it about Wells Fargo? What is it that started that focus?
It's a good question, too. One, Wells Fargo is very prominent within the city of Santa Rosa. Mm-hmm. Also, the city of Santa Rosa has a large immigrant community, and it's a very relatively diverse community. I originally hail from Petaluma, mm-hmm. and these communities, like Petaluma particularly, is very, how do I put this, it's very monocultural, it's mm-hmm. very white, and it's not very diverse at all. But if you come up to Santa Rosa, the community is much more diverse, and the community here is more concerned with these sort of issues, and we are too now. Why Wells Fargo? They are available, it's issue-centric, and there is a large available community of people that we can very much work with to target our common, I hesitate to use the term foe, but foe.
I'm hearing it, that you have a common foe there. It's sort of like, it's almost like a term out of knighthood, you know? It's like, so there's something there that they're doing that is, it's putting them at odds with the immigrant community, it's putting them at odds with the Latino community, it's putting them at odds with you. And if you're talking about the 99%, perhaps by extension, you might even speak to that.
Absolutely. Wells Fargo has many bond investments within private prison corporations, GEO Group, and other specific corporations, and they have concocted a scheme that is politely termed Machiavellian, but less politely termed, it's profoundly evil. Wells Fargo accepts the matricula, the Mexican consular ID, so that people that are immigrating here can essentially cash in at Wells Fargo.
Yeah.
But Wells Fargo has a three-tiered plan. They accept the matricula, so people that immigrate here can cash their checks, but they also invest in private prisons for immigrants. But there is another gambit. On the third angle, the Wells Fargo also aggressively lobbies for more harsh anti-immigration laws, thus creating an artificial market for the people, and thus this crazy, insane, evil scheme is brought into full circle.
Very interesting. You know, when you read some of the histories of how, like in the Mexican War, yeah, during the late 1800s and early 1900s, how Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, to a great degree California as well, was in that mix of bringing immigrants in from south of the border by the busload, saying, hey, you know, we love you, we welcome you, come sweat your guts out in our fields. And at the same time, we're doing all these bandit raids and cheating them out of money, doing all kinds of segregating them completely so their children couldn't go to schools, like doing all kinds of weird things. And there are a number of accounts on that in history. It's not like I'm making this up or expressing a point of view. It's actually what I've read. But what I'm hearing you say is that this kind of a setup, you're describing a setup that's sort of right out of that kind of playbook where, well, we welcome you, we're going to take your money, but watch out for that knock on the door or that ICE agent who's going to pull your car over.
Within Occupy, you have a varying, like, how to put this, varying critiques of capitalism. Some people are up, and I hesitate to use up against traditional capitalism. Some people are just against capitalism. Some people want to see the entire scheme reordered or restructured. But in many ways, the capitalism, by and large, has a tendency to, there will always be, how to put this, amoral or sociopathic or just downright evil individuals that when their only objective is money, the name of the game is morality goes out the window. And this has been, I hesitate to use the term running gag in history, but this is not the first time capitalism has done evil things to people that happen to live a bit of distance from us. This sort of thing happens in the Congo with blood diamonds. Every time there's a resource or a bit of money on the line, the exploitation of human beings becomes not, I wouldn't say a priority, but it becomes viable.
Would you say that one of the issues that looping this together is about labor costs, the price of labor that immigrants supply, this cheap labor?
It's interesting because if you look at it from all these different economic theories, like the silent hand of sort of Adam Smith sort of economics, that if we constantly increase the amount of raw labor, the price should go down. But in many ways, there's always sort of weird competing interests within those countries that pertains to labor. But since the unions are so weak, there's all sorts of strange interchanges. The banking system and the financial system is not too concerned with labor anymore because the banking system and the financial system is all financially based. They don't actually manufacture anything. They don't actually use any sort of skilled tool. They don't actually make anything. So they're not too concerned with the overall labor pool of what's going on. So these banks can do this sort of thing and not be too concerned of what's actually happening within the wider economy because they're not actually manufacturing based. They don't actually depend on labor too much. So they're just free to exploit and make money any way they can, and they found another way.
And they don't have to be too concerned with what that particular thing that they might be investing in is actually doing to people.
Correct.
I mean, there's a long history with the tobacco industry that way, asbestos and things like that. There have been many examples. When we look at private prison systems, what I've heard is that we're not really looking at the invisible hand of the market here. We're talking about the taxpayers' money being taken through legislative fiat and poured into these prisons to pay for detaining people.
It seems crazy. It feels like a very old issue with the labor movement is how do you defeat large unions? How do you defeat large coordinated labor movements? And one of the really old ones, one of the really old first name of the game options was you increase automation and you remove them from the equation entirely. So the financial system of this country has stumbled upon or has discovered a way to extract revenue and capital without having to deal with a labor movement. In many ways, they found this weird, strange, unholy resource that they can just suck like a vampire.
There is a question that I have in this, which is if it's going to be a growth business or a growth industry, how does an industry that's based on detaining people grow?
Alabama figured that out, and I think it's HB 60 in Alabama. The anti-immigration law is turning the entire state into essentially a quasi-police state. Essentially, immigrants without any sort of ID are checked. You cannot buy power. You cannot buy water if you do not have an ID. And now the logical way to make this sort of industry grow and to increase your overall bottom line is to aggressively push for more lobbying in Congress, in legislature, for more aggressive anti-immigration laws.
Now there's been a law signed by President Obama that where government federal agents, if they suspect just by looking at someone that they might be a terrorist, can actually pick them up and detain them. There's a new market there.
It is, and the market just keeps getting bigger. And within Occupy Santa Rosa, anyway, everyone's simply aghast at this continues to occur. And
we're not shocked anymore.
We're simultaneously aghast and also mortified. It's now an industry.
Yeah.
And it continues to grow. It'll grow like a cancer on the state. Mm-hmm. And more money will just be shoveled into it. And laws will get more strict, it feels like. And as long as there are more money in it, you'll have more lobbyists.
Okay, so there it is. There's the picture as you're bringing it to us. And going forward, I have a question for you, Jesse. What did you do? Can you describe what happened and your participation in it on Friday, January 6th, last Friday?
And I would also like to disclaim that when I'm speaking on the program, I have no real authority as negotiation or diplomacy or as part of our media team to speak for Occupy Santa Rosa. I can only speak for myself as an individual that happens to be part of Occupy Santa Rosa.
Very good.
As for my own involvement within the Wells Fargo action, the original objective was to go inside Wells Fargo and shut the bank down. Or we would protest within the bank and we would be removed at some point by either the bank security or local law enforcement officials. However, there were some issues with our overall strategy. And what had happened was the bank had managed to lock up early. We had some planning issues here and there. I had managed to go around the back and get inside the back door. And another one of our members managed to bluff her way past the guards and get inside.
That was two of you in downtown.
That would be Carolyn Eppel, who's really awesome. She's a 60-year-old anthropologist. She's really cool. And, yeah, shout out to her. But we managed to get inside, and I started the mic check. I started yelling. And thankfully, Carolyn had managed to get in by this point, and I avoided being labeled the lone raving madman. Mm-hmm. And that because when you're alone screaming, you're not mentally sound. But when another person's screaming, you're part of a political action.
Yes.
Exactly. So, but the bank had closed down by this time, and now the authorities moved in. They were relatively peaceful. They asked us to stop. We refused. They handcuffed us and sort of shuttled us out of the bank, and that was the end of that. However, mm-hmm. The remainder of the group, another five individuals, since they were locked out, they thought about it, and they determined that they should go to the Cleveland branch and shut that down. So they went over there, and they shut down the Cleveland branch, and this branch had been redirecting people to the Cleveland branch, so the place that they'd been redirecting it to shut down too.
Did you put up a banner when you were inside the bank?
We did. We put up the banner, and it was...
You made a statement.
We did.
How long did this actually transpire?
Felt like a year, but really, it was not more than a few minutes. I gather 5 minutes. We managed to get a little political statement and then a personal story each before the law enforcement officials arrived.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so you did get to make a point. It was very clear, very evident that it was an action that had to do with civil disobedience, and it was nonviolent.
Yes.
And so then there were about seven altogether from this action who actually were taken into custody.
Yes.
And then later that evening, you were able to leave.
Oh yeah, we were all bailed out, and we got out around midnight or something. But I hesitate to bring this up, but I think I need to. Many ways, the jail system within this country is the first line of defense for our mental health services in this country.
Interesting.
In that it is where a great many of the mentally unsound in this country wind up. So we go to the jail, and there's a man pounding and screaming at the top of his lungs the entire time in the back of the jail room. But thankfully, our dutiful law enforcement providers have installed mini blinds on the little windows, so they can, when they find somebody they don't want to look at, they can just close the blinds on them. And we had to watch Judge Judy for 10 hours. Now, there's worse things in the world, and I'm sure there's, but I'm just saying that this is the state of our jail system in this country.
Okay, Judge Judy, on that note, I'm going to be back here to conclude this interview with Jesse, and not speaking for, but who's involved. And concluding an interview here with Jesse, who was involved in the action on Friday, January 6th. For Jesse, it took place in the Wells Fargo Bank in Santa Rosa. So you were able to make a statement then, Jesse, and you were able to, and of course, the inevitable did happen. I mean, it would have been strange if they hadn't, you know, led you off. And so you were able to come back out. So I am curious about, do you feel as though you fulfilled your intention in the action? And I'd like to find out a little bit about your vision. I mean, what are you building here with actions like this?
Broadly, there's an old saying, direct action gets the goods. And while marches and speeches and lots of talking really is kind of, it's good. I mean, I like a good speech like everyone else, but ultimately the civil rights, all that was ultimately won in the street. One way or another. It's doing things, being active, hasn't been done for a while in this country. In fact, it's been about a full generation since we've had really any real... I mean, we've had, like, let's say, enviro activists doing civil disobedience, and more power to them. But we haven't really seen a wider popular movement doing... I don't want you to use the term wider popular movement, but we haven't seen it on this scale for a long time. And in many ways, it's a whole lot of new people getting their feet wet as far as the real nitty-gritty of activism. I have to be arrested, but I work tomorrow, and you really have to sort of reconcile this, how it's going. In many ways, this is people running before they can walk, people learning what to do as an activist for the first time. Many of these people have never done any political activities whatsoever, and they've been suddenly spurred to action. I know I haven't. I've never been arrested before. I've never done anything wrong. I was always really nice to police. I was I always asked them.
And you have been since.
And I have been since. And in many ways, I still respect the police as sort of being the in like an elemental forces sort of way, in that they represent order and I represent the something else. You just have to understand the structure. In many ways, this is the structure of things. This movement has to build itself before it can stand.
Do you see any kind of new community coming out of it? Is the impact going to be, as far as you see it, communities, or is it going to be on actual politics?
That's also a good question. That's a wider question for Occupy as a whole. Some people...
You don't have to tackle it if you don't want to.
And I can give it a shot. Some people within Occupy think that this should be a fundamentally reform-based movement. Some people think that this should be a fundamentally revolutionary-based movement. Some people are in the opinion that this movement should just be essentially constructing a structure within a structure that will survive when the larger structure essentially becomes unstable for whatever reason.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of different thoughts on the subject, and they're sort of protean and floating around. But as for what I think, I'm not sure what to think. I just have to hope that the structure manages, like, it's hard to say.
Yeah.
It really is.
Oh, it's big. It's really big. I mean, and you are in what some might regard as a small part of something that we've seen happening across the world right now. So, Jesse, thank you for coming into Shift Shapers Polar Reversal Radio here on KBBF FM 89.1. Really appreciate that you took your time to do this.
And thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
We are the 99%. We are the oppressed. We are the suppressed. We are the depressed. And we're tired. We're standing up in over 400 cities across the world. We are standing up. We closing down banks. Down with the Union Bank. Down with JP Morgan and Chase. Down with Washington Mutual and Wells Fargo. Why did the bank get bailed out and our schools got shut down?
And we're here at the March for both immigrant rights and economic justice. And we have here one of the key leaders in the community, the founder of the Leadership Institute for Ecology and Economy, Rick Tice. Rick, why are you here today?
Well, I'm outraged at what Wells Fargo has done. I mean, the recent exposure has been really horrific, and it just shows that Wells Fargo puts profits ahead of people and planet, and this has got to stop. You know, for years I've known that Wells Fargo has provided major loans to Massey Coal, which is the major remover of mountaintops in this country, and it's outrageous what they do to the environment in that regard. Their vice president here in Santa Rosa 2 years ago served on the board of directors of the Sonoma County Alliance that ran the most vicious racist attack to elect their candidate, David Rabbit, to the board of supervisors. It was outrageous, and this has got to stop. I've had an account with Wells Fargo from 1968. I've got one more check left to clear, and I'm out of there and into a local bank.
You're wearing a very interesting shirt. It says, corporations are not people. What are your feelings about the recent legislation where corporations can invest as people in political campaigns? What do you think the effect will have on the 2012 elections?
I think it's going to be outrageous. It's going to, it's really going to move us more toward a fascist government. As the corporations spend more money to elect their people to Congress, which is already corrupted by the overinvestment of corporate lobbyists.
So do you think that the fact that they will be able to invest unlimited amounts of money into the elections will have an effect in some way? And can that be counteracted by a movement such as the 99% Occupy movement in some way, shape, or form?
Well, that's what has to happen. And the 99% has really got to work hard to educate the community, to educate the other voters that, you know, the right wing does not have their best interests at heart. How can poor people vote for Republicans who want to raise their taxes? I don't understand it. And I think the movement here, the Occupy movement, the 99%, the North Bay Organizing Project, and the other organizations that are here today really have their work cut out for them, because money talks.
And last but not least, we had a comment by Newman Strawbridge. He said that these kind of movements, groundswells, are much more important in the long run than any political elections, because politicians like to cater to the masses. What are your feelings about that?
Oh, I hope he's right.
Me too.
Yeah, I hope he's right. That's all I can say.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Rick.
Thank you, Evelyn. It's so great to see you. Keep up the great work.
Thanks. Can I get your name?
My name is Kim Caldaway.
Tell us, why are you here today?
I'm here because I'm a public health professional, and greed is not good for health. Wells Fargo and other banks like this, working so cynically to take money from immigrants by offering them the possibility of putting hard-earned money into the Wells Fargo Bank, taking interest from those hard-earned people, and then investing in detention centers that hold those same individuals who are working all their lives here to raise families and contribute to the community. Those detention centers where people are treated inhumanely and have no recourse to justice is bad for all of our health. It's bad for the community's health, and we need to eradicate that kind of a scourge on the health of the community.
Do you think these kind of swells, ground swells, could have an impact on such large corporations such as Wells Fargo?
I think they can. If speaking from a healthcare model, if you have antibodies, which may be what we might call ourselves now, enough antibodies can eradicate viruses and even bacterial diseases. And I say, let's pull the antibodies together and mount a ferocious attack on this virus.
Now, Newman Strawbridge says that working together, collaborations of different communities, is more powerful than any election. What are your feelings about that?
Well, we know that elected officials earn millions of dollars, maybe a little bit of it from people like us who give them $100. But the majority of their funds have to come from corporations. So when you've got corporations essentially buying elections and then using the elected officials as puppets for their purposes, definitely we need to take charge of our country, and this has got to be the only way. Working together, sharing our ideas, our concerns, our suffering, and our victories. That is the only way forward. I'm really happy to be here today.
What do you think about the outcome? Is it what people expected, more or less? Or
the outcome for today, in terms of numbers, vastly exceeds my expectation on a Friday afternoon, especially just after the holidays and kids kind of getting back to school. This is a tremendous success, and I think it shows that people have their ears to the ground. They're listening for opportunities to get together and make their voices known. I've talked to physicians here, some of my friends, who have just passed it on word of mouth from physician to physician. I don't think that's happened in the past. That's just one tiny indicator. There are families here. There are union members here. We've got tremendous music. This is a very positive start to 2012.
Where do you think we go from here?
We're going to have a lot more of this. We were just talking about, just for our community health, the big picture of public health, we should be having marches every single week. It'd be good for the community. It would be good for our health. It would be good for our mental health. And it might turn this place around. So let's keep going.
Are you planning on walking over to Wells Fargo?
I sure am. I'm in an orange jumpsuit, a prison jumpsuit, along with many of my fellow Committee for Immigrant Rights activists. And we're going to go there, and we're going to demonstrate with our bodies just what it looks like when you throw people into prison with the same money that you took from them that they used in their community.
The time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interests. That's right. They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around a kitchen table to figure out how badly they're getting by a system that threw them overboard 30 years ago. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly sheer jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your retirement money. They want it back so they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street. You know something? They'll get it. They'll get it all from you sooner or later because they own this place. It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
El pueblo donde está, el pueblo donde está exigiendo libertad. Sí se puede.
Dealing with the corporations, not with the liberation of our people. We are the 99%, and we've got it. We're standing up in over 400 cities across the world. We are standing up. We call the damn banks.
Sí se puede. Put
your money out of this bank.
Put it in the local community credit.
This is your host, Daniel Kerbine, with Shift Shapers Pole Reversal Radio. I'm here with Tony Del Monte, who is very active with the movement to occupy Santa Rosa, and in fact was at the forefront and one of the people who was in the lead of an action that took place at one of the Wells Fargo bank branches that resulted in his arrest and also the arrest of some other Occupy Santa Rosa activists. Tony Del Monte, thanks for getting together with me here at KVBF FM and being on Shift Shapers Pole Reversal Radio.
Thank you for having me on community radio.
I was in the studio being the anchor for the call-ins that were taking place during the action that took place on the 6th. Giving a little background that I'd heard and read in different places was that Occupy Santa Rosa doesn't seem to be generating much inclusion with minority groups or with Latinos. So on the 6th of January, I'm seeing and hearing Latinos everywhere hollering, si se puede. I'm finding out that Occupy Santa Rosa has teamed up with a diverse array of groups from the community, united on two or three main points, and directing their march towards Wells Fargo Bank and then onto the Courthouse Square in downtown Santa Rosa. So what were the groups that got involved, and how did that come about?
Well, Occupy Santa Rosa united with MECHA, which is a Chicano students group. They have a chapter at Santa Rosa Junior College and at every university in the United States. Also, the DREAM Act Alliance, which is a group of working people and students who feel that they have earned their stay here in the United States. Even though they are undocumented, they have contributed to this society for a long time, and they're fighting for their right to stay. And also the Grayton Day Labor Center.
Yes, which represents sometimes undocumented, but certainly low-wage workers in Sonoma County.
And also immigrants' rights group.
Right, I think it was the Sonoma County Committee for Immigrant Rights.
That's right.
So how did that come together? Was that it just came out of it? Like some of the people from these groups had actually come to the Occupy activities or to some public meetings you'd had? How did that come about? Was it some outreach?
Well, you know, we didn't have to reach out very far because since Occupy Santa Rosa sprung up on October 15th, of 2011. These groups have been coming to our meetings and have been getting involved, and we have, you know, been going to their meetings. We are one activist community, and we challenge ourselves to expand more and more, you know, all the time. We can only do one action at a time, but we are constantly unfolding for the whole community.
Something like 500-600 people showed up there. It was on a Friday in the afternoon. It was on a work day. There were probably a lot of people who couldn't make it, but about 500 or 600 people made it.
Yes.
And one of the things that I noticed from photographs and descriptions that were given to me is that there was a group there dressed in orange prison jumpsuits. They were some from the immigrant rights group. There were probably some from other groups like MECHA and from Occupy Santa Rosa, and I'm wondering, what were they illustrating with that? What were they protesting there?
They were symbolic of the detainees held in immigrant detention centers that are, you know, for-profit prisons run by prison corporations, specifically GEO Group and the CCA.
Right, Corrections Corporation of America is the name of that one, right?
Yes.
In fact, they did a little play, too, as well, of people who are being picked up and they're being actually shipped out to detention centers.
That's correct. There have been people in Sonoma County who have been arrested. First of all, I should say they have been profiled as non-citizens and sent to detention centers in Arizona. So it's not only in Arizona, you know, these jails exist in Arizona, but
anyone from any state could be sent there.
And there's a distinction between being detained and being arrested, correct? Because they're arrested means you're charged with something.
Yes, that's correct.
And is being undocumented, is that a crime in the United States?
We certainly have a large portion of our work that is done by undocumented people. And so, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword where it is...
If they're committing a crime, they're getting a lot of work done.
I'll say this. It's not a crime to be undocumented, but undocumented people are subject to, you know, harsher enforcement of laws.
And one of the things that you and others in the Occupy movement have expressed is that these detention centers, which big ones are in Arizona, are actually, they're publicly funded. They're privately owned, but they're funded by public money that has been funneled through a number of laws that have been passed. Can you tell me a little bit about what's been happening in Arizona?
Yeah, that's correct. The federal government pays $123 a day per inmate to these detention centers. When I say the federal government, I mean the people's money. So our tax dollars are being put to fund these detention centers. And lobbyists for these for-profit prison corporations lobby Congress, such as, you know, in Arizona, where laws like SB 1070 are passed, which allow the police to racially profile people based on their ethnic appearance, their spoken accent, or if the police just have a hunch that somebody is a non-citizen. They are allowed to detain people for investigation. They are often held for, you know, long periods of time, 2 months, 4 months, 6 months, years, oftentimes deported. I know that over 5,000 families have been broken up because of deportations like this.
And then the children end up in foster care.
That's true.
And when I first learned of this SB 1070 in Arizona, I was shocked by it. And a number of people I noticed in the journalism world were shocked by it, in spite of themselves wanting to be objective. In fact, during a press conference that the governor had given, Governor Brewer had given, one of the people in the press, in the media, asked, well, can you tell me what does an undocumented immigrant look like? What does an illegal alien look like? Do they look like me? And of course, the governor had no answer to that. And I'm going to, before we go further, I'm going to give a disclaimer here for our listeners that the opinions expressed on this program, and actually all of our programs on KBBF, are the opinions of sometimes the programmer, and certainly the opinions of the guests, and not necessarily those of KBBF FM 89.1 or the Bilingual Broadcasting Foundation. And so we are expressing some opinions here, and I am mainly looking for the opinions of my guest here, Tony Del Monte, who's active with Occupy Santa Rosa, and who actually was arrested at Wells Fargo Bank on Friday, January the 6th. And that's where I'm going next with this, Tony, is how does Wells Fargo figure into all this with the private prisons, with all these laws?
Wells Fargo manages investments in these prisons. So Wells Fargo is profiting from the function of these prisons. So when they pass a racist law and detain a person, and then the federal government pays for that person's detention, Wells Fargo gets a portion.
So this is something that is subsidized by Arizona tax money, by California tax money, by United States federal tax money, and it ends up funding a privately owned prison system. It's public because there are obviously stockholders. That's where somehow Wells Fargo gets involved in all this. These privately run prison corporation that's subsidized heavily by taxes. So how does Wells Fargo get involved in this?
You know, this is just one example of a very despicable of the ways that corporations leech off of the public fund. And could you rephrase your question?
Sure. Well, you did mention that Wells Fargo is involved in directing. They're helping to get funders for this corporation, these corporations like Corrections Corporation of America and the other one that you had mentioned. Now, they are indicating in the media that they're not directly involved. They're just helping their investors to select from mutual funds. Can you
elaborate on that a little? Wells Fargo claims that they do not put their own money into these investments, that merely they are managing other people's investments. The management of mutual funds, which are, you know, a group of an investment in many, many different corporations, some of which just happen to be these corporations that are causing the detention of immigrants. They try to say that they're innocent, that those corporations just happen to be a part of the mutual fund and we just happen to be the ones running this management. But they are profiting monetarily from doing this.
And another piece of this is that for a corporation like that to continue to grow, if this is a growth economy, how does a corporation like that grow?
Well, in this case, they will grow by detaining more and more people. That's the nature of this kind of money making.
So on January 6th, Friday, can you tell me a little bit about what took place? I showed up after, well, actually, there was a branch downtown Santa Rosa and another branch on Cleveland Avenue in Santa Rosa. I showed up at the Cleveland Avenue branch shortly after arrests were made. Can you tell me a little bit about what took place and what the Occupy group did and what the other parties involved did?
Sure thing. I'll explain our intentions and also how it unfolded. A group of seven people of Occupy Santa Rosa went to the main branch of Wells Fargo downtown on 3rd Street, and we tried to enter there to present a mic check to inform the people of these, you know, crimes against humanity that Wells Fargo is committing. And only two of us actually got in because they tightened up security. They did not want us to shut their bank down. Two of us got in. The rest of us were outside. They did shut down the bank. The two activists inside the main branch presented the mic check. They unfolded a banner that said homes, not jails. They were citizens arrested by security guards in Wells Fargo. We were observing this through the windows. They closed all the blinds so that we couldn't see what was going on inside.
Oh, no.
Eventually, the police came to bring these people to jail. So the police took custody of these people after the citizens' arrest that took place. They were taken originally downtown. Now, while this was occurring, the management of Wells Fargo was directing clientele, the customers that were trying to use the bank that day, to go to the Cleveland Avenue branch. So the five of us that did not get in the main branch went to the Cleveland Avenue branch and performed our mic check there. I want to be clear that this action, we planned it and executed it completely nonviolently. We specifically chose to present our mic check in a friendly and calm tone, not so as not to yell at people, so that people hear our message and not misinterpret our tone. And we were also very respectful of people's space. When clients or workers needed to walk by to do their thing, we would part the way for them to give them respectful space as we were performing our mic check. After about 20 minutes, a police officer showed up. He informed us that we were not welcome in the bank. That was the first time that we were told that. And so he said that if we continue to do what we were doing, we would be arrested. And we told him that we have no other choice but to do what we're doing. And he gave us another warning, and we told him that we are choosing to stay and to speak our minds.
During this time, were you holding a banner?
I was holding the mic check that I was reading. I was also holding this informational flyer that we gave to all the tellers.
Can you read it now?
Yeah. This flyer here says that the top five Wells Fargo executives made $140 million last year. The average teller at Wells Fargo makes $10.86 an hour. How much is your labor worth? Occupy Santa Rosa stands for the 99%. Please join us. And I was also holding this testimony of a worker who was detained and deported from the United States for really not a crime at all.
Okay. And you were able to deliver that whole message?
Yeah, we delivered our message.
Okay. And you were there with the banner, and that was when the security people came and said they were making a citizen's arrest. You actually, technically, I guess, were under arrest at that time.
The citizen's arrest occurred in the main branch downtown.
Oh, in the main branch, okay.
So we actually dealt directly with the police.
Uh-huh.
And so after about a half hour of in the bank practicing our rights to free speech, the police came and, you know, he said to me, put your hands behind your back. And I complied. I put my papers in my pocket, put my hands behind my back where I was handcuffed. You know, I received, you know, a little cut on my wrist from the handcuffs.
It was those plastic ones.
No, it was, they were metal handcuffs, mm-hmm. and you know, they put, one was on really tight, the other hand was on, I'd say, fairly. Fortunately, that was the only injury that occurred to me that day. I was handcuffed.
What were you charged with?
I was charged with trespassing. I was frisked inside the bank along with the other four activists. At this point, we began to chant, "People, not profits, homes, not jails." And we continued that chant very strongly. As we were escorted outside, handcuffed by the police, we were greeted by activists, by clients of the bank, by legal observers. We had a lawyer present. It was very good to see the support of the people supporting us, putting our livelihood at risk.
And when I got there, people were not sure how long the folks who'd been arrested were going to be in custody and when they would be released, how much bail would be involved. But you were back out again. When? Did it take a day or hours? Was it? Do you have anything you'd care to say about that?
The arrest at the Cleveland Avenue branch took place around 4:45 in the afternoon, and we were released around 11 p.m. that night.
Okay. So you were actually in the slammer then?
Yes.
That was civil disobedience action that resulted in an arrest. I'm talking here with Tony Del Monte, who's an activist who has actually done a civil disobedience and been arrested for it through Occupy Santa Rosa and in league with a number of immigration groups in the Sonoma County area in the North Bay of California. And I'm just curious about one thing, and we've spoken before about Occupy Santa Rosa. What got you involved in this movement? Is it something that you've been an activist for a long time? Is it? Can you tell me a little bit about that?
You know, I've been active for a long time, more so as an individual. I'm associated with various groups, you know, activist groups, but for the most part, in the past, I have acted as an individual. You know, I've been wanting to stand up for our rights and for a better world, a world that's not driven by economic profits, but by advancement of the human race and the earth. And so when Occupy Santa Rosa formed, you know, I should really say when Occupy Wall Street lit the bonfire, it made sense to me to go and connect with my tribe.
And that's really what it has been turning into, isn't it? One of the things that I've been seeing forming and coming together with the Occupy movement, any of the places where I've seen it occurring, is that it's the creation of a new kind of community. There are people who are not just in league with a cause, it's a building of a new community. Are you seeing it that way? Or am I just looking at this in some different way? Are you experiencing it that way? You mentioned it as a tribe.
You know, I very much see it that way. The economic system, the United States, as we know it, the way that it is run, pretty much tries to take that away from you. We are institutionalized to not see each other as humans, but as, you know, just workers or some way to make money. And so many of us really resent that we are treat ourselves in a system of this way, when, you know, Occupy Santa Rosa is a response to that, to say that first of all, we're human and we can do humble human acts to make our world a better place instead of just continuing with the status quo that perpetuates these ills that we are trying to change.
Well, one of the things that I've looked at in creating a new community, and I've often said, and I have colleagues here, Evelina Molina does a morning show, and she had you on here today. We're of the belief that the new community, if there's ever going to be one, and there is one forming, that the new community is a community of bilingual people and is a community of multiple languages and cultures. What do you think of that?
You know, I think that we need to see ourselves as one community, as one cosmic community. And
without language being a barrier.
Exactly.
Because when we speak to each other,
when we refer to each other as, oh, the English-speaking community or the Spanish-speaking community, we're dividing ourselves in words. And so we need to change our consciousness to unite it. And so by everyone making an effort to be bilingual as best as possible, we unify how we speak about each other and we become one. We already are one, but we need to act as one.
I'll just touch bases on one thing here before we get done. And because it's in another conversation we had, you were telling me a little more about Arizona. there's this series of laws that are just being thrown around out there. At least that's the impression I get, having to do with putting a ban on Chicano studies, putting a ban on where Spanish language will appear in the public domain, which seems to run against the grain of what we've just been talking about here, about creating a new community where everybody is somebody. We look at some place like Arizona where they want to just shut the doors and separate. Any comments?
The way that I see it is that SB 107 in Arizona and the copycat laws that exist in Alabama and Georgia are basically a new era of Jim Crow laws used to subjugate Spanish-speaking brown people or anyone that could be looked at as an immigrant.
And this happens often during periods of economic downturn, where people start getting irrational, and, well, it's my opinion that it's irrational, but where people start to look at outsider groups to blame for what's going on. Do you think there's a piece of that in Arizona?
Oh, very much so. Corporations are usurping government and our minds to try and blame immigrants for the problems. You know, they will not succeed in doing that because we do know better. But they try to do that as much as possible, and they try to make money off of this, you know, because people are angry about the economy. And so they're trying to tap into old school, you know, white supremacist mentality to try and stir up this fervor so that people direct their anger toward immigrants and toward Spanish speakers. And I really resent that they try and divide our community that way, that they try to, you know, say that problem is in these people when really, like, you know, a lot of undocumented people have been contributing to our society more so than many documented people.
And the movement that you're involved in is all about unifying and creating a new community where everybody is somebody.
Yes.
I'm paraphrasing, but you want to wrap it up with a little statement about Occupy and what it's all about?
You know, Occupy is a group of individuals. When we choose to make a statement as a group, we ask each other permission on how to represent our group. But largely, we are a group of individuals who contribute in our own individualistic way for a greater cause.
Great. And your vision is?
My vision is, right now, the means to the goal.
Yeah.
The goal is justice.
Yeah.
The goal is economic justice. The goal is to get the 1%, the people who own and have control over our lives, to be humble and to give for the greater good. You know, and the means of doing that is the people uniting on a common front to address all injustices, economic and racial.
Tony Del Monte, thank you very much for joining us here on KBBF FM 89.1 and on Shift Shapers Pole Reversal Radio. And we invite you to come back here again sometime.
I look forward to coming back to Bilingual Community Radio.
The detention of migrants is a multi-billion dollar industry.
One in which immigrants are traded like products.
They are for sale to the highest bidder.
Who benefits and who profits? Corrections Corporation of America, or CCA, the GEO Group, and the Management and Training Corporation combined own over 200 facilities in the nation.
With over 150,000 bed spaces for a total profit of close to $5 billion per year.
Private prisons profit like a hotel. The more occupants that go in, the more money comes out.
You just sell it like you're selling cars, or real estate, or hamburgers.
Private prisons rely on anti-immigrant laws that guarantee them access to fresh inmates.
Here's how they do it. The American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC, is an extreme right-wing membership organization comprised of state legislators and powerful multinational corporations, including the Corrections Corporation of America.
ALEC is the most active private prison lobbyist group pushing for anti-immigrant laws like Arizona's SB 1070.
Russell Pierce, like CCA, is an ALEC member, one with obscure ties to national white separatist neo-Nazi groups. During an ALEC meeting, CCA and Pierce crafted a model legislation that became, almost word for word, Arizona's SB 1070.
Whether people are undocumented or not doesn't matter.
as long as they fill the detention facilities for days, months, or even years.
SB 1070 and their copycat laws sprouting up across the country represent the perfect money machine.
Cuando el pobre crea en el cobre, ya podremos cantar libertad. Cuando el pobre crea en el pobre, construiremos la fraternidad.
Las calles son del pueblo, el pueblo donde está. El pueblo a todas las calles exigiendo libertad. ¡Sí se puede! ¡Sí se puede! ¡Sí se puede!
¡No more investment in misery and war! ¡And prison! ¡The police! ¡Let's invest in our children!
¡Bank got bailed out! ¡We got sold out! ¡Bank got bailed out! ¡We got sold out! ¡Bank got bailed out!
And I want to know, where are the people who were in those homes? Have they been made homeless? Have they been pushed in on somebody else who doesn't really have enough space, but they just didn't want you to be on the street? We know that those banks each control $2 trillion in assets. $2 trillion. Yet, they would sweep us out of our homes like dead mice. So we're going to tell them that we're not having that anymore, that we're finished with that. And now I want to say to them, I want you to prove you, I even owe you anything. You know, it's like, where is the paperwork? Where is the beef? Okay? Because there's so much corruption in the process that hardly any of the mortgages are even valid, right? But they push us out of our homes anyway. So we're here to tell the bank that we are not going to take it anymore.
So we also just sat down Wells Fargo, did we not? Wells Fargo, who's foreclosed on so many of our homes, is now withholding them. And who's also benefiting and profiteering off of immigrant detention. Is that okay? Are we going to say no to immigrant detention? Are we going to say no to private prison profiteering? Are we going to say no to Wells Fargo? Prison developer and detention centers, you will not. And on this Saturday, undocumented youth, folks who are fighting and standing together for immigrants, 67 sueños, donde está 67 sueños? 67 sueños o 67 sueños, una colectiva de jóvenes que está luchando contra este banco, que está luchando contra el 1% que se están beneficiando, who's fighting against that 1% who's benefiting from immigrant detention. Wells Fargo has shared about immigrant detention, and on Saturday they're going to shut down Wells Fargo once again. Are you going to be here to support them? Van a estar aquí el sábado para apoyar a los jóvenes que van a decirle a Wells Fargo no a la detención de inmigrantes. ¿Vamos a estar aquí? Who shut down the bank? Who shut down the bank?
Las calles son del pueblo. El pueblo donde está. El pueblo.